WKAR's Studio S at Michigan State University, this is Current Sports.
Well, here we are, December 17th, 2013. Welcome to Current Sports. I'm your host, Al Martin. I know many of you out there, many of you Detroit Lions fans, have got to be licking your wounds today after what ensued on Monday Night Football last night. That was a tough one, I think, for anyone watching, even if you didn't have ties to any team. And you got to feel for all the Lions fans out there who were watching that game and watching what ensued in that final quarter, in that second half, I should say. Wow. Frustrating stuff. And we're going to dive into it, folks. Later on in this show, we're going to be taking your calls on the Lions losing to the Baltimore Ravens 18-16 on Monday Night Football last night. We know many of you out there have strong opinions about what took place. They lost on a 61-yard field goal. And that's what did it. That's what did it. Justin Tucker. Wow, what a powerful leg. And I tell you, it was an unbelievable moment. But there were many moments before that play that led to the Lions losing that game. Again, we're going to take your calls later on in today's show to get it off your chest if you're a Lions fan out there. Because it's just like every single season, every single year, you just have one of those heartbreaking moments. And this one was definitely one of those moments. We've asked you all to comment on our Facebook page as well when it comes to the Lions' loss to the Baltimore Ravens, and many of you have decided to weigh in. And I'll read a few comments right now. Why not? Carnell has to say, quote, "The refs clearly missed that pass interference in the end zone. Gruden called it and said that could cost the Lions this game and the division. The refs in all sports always had something against the Detroit sports." So Carnell is definitely from the D, and he's taking this one personal, blaming it on the refs. I wouldn't blame it on the refs, Carnell, but you'll get my thoughts later on it. But here's Max. Max Rebner, a friend of the show. Max says, quote, "The non-pass interference call was definitely a setback, but the Lions didn't help their own cause either. No touchdowns from Megatron and two uncharacteristically bad drops that could have led to two more scoring drives. It sucks that we seem to never get the benefit of the doubt, though." And I think they were kind of going back and forth. Carnell responded by saying, "I can't even call him Megatron. I expected him, out of all people, to show up, but he dropped the ball, literally. 2-point conversion, perfect play and pass, and he didn't stay in bounds. Stafford, unforced turnovers are beyond ridiculous right now, and they aren't talked about enough. Tony Romo is Stafford's big brother, and he is starting to play more and more like him." I'll read two more here. This is from Kevin. Kevin weighed in saying, quote, "Emptying the backfield on 3rd-and-1 multiple times, and we have one of the best running back combos in the league. Fire Jim today." And Mark says, "Those 3rd-and-1 play calls were horrible." That's from our Current Sports Facebook page. If you want to weigh in on this and you don't happen to be by a phone and can't call in, you know that you can call, that you can go in and weigh in through social media. You can tweet me on Twitter at Al Martin WKAR, and also go on Facebook.com/currentsports and give your thoughts on the Lions letting one slip through their hands. And now, folks, we don't even know if the Lions are even going to make the playoffs. Something that we were singing a totally different tune a few weeks ago here on the show. And now the Lions are in desperation mode. They no longer hold the first place NFC North top spot. And things are not looking good, folks. Again, we'll be taking your calls later on in the show. If you're not by a phone and you want to weigh on this thing, go on Twitter, tweet me at Al Martin WKAR, or go to our Facebook page at facebook.com/currentsports. Ravens coach John Harbaugh, he chose to let Tucker try the longest kick of his career by 5 yards, that is, instead of going for it on that 4th and 8 from the Detroit 43. And Tucker went on to say, quote, "If they send me out there, they have reason to. It's because they think I can make the kick." And it was a beauty, folks. He got a lot of leg on it. It went pop right in the air. I thought it was going to slice midway through. I'm sure many of you thought that. One unbelievable kick. Detroit is now 7-7. They have hurt its playoff chances by losing 4 of 5, falling out of sole possession in first place of the NFC North to third behind division-leading Chicago Bears and Green Bay Packers. Again, we're going to dive into this game later on. Let's get right to our headliners really quick. Here are your current sports quick hit headliners really quick. On a positive note, on the contrast, Pistons and Pacers, folks, on the night the Eastern Conference's best team looked like anything but, Josh Smith scored 30 points. Greg Monroe had 13 points and 12 rebounds to help Detroit Pistons send the Indiana Pacers to a 101-96 loss. The Pacers first at home this season. Paul George was 4 of 14 from the field, finishing with 17 points, 9 rebounds, and 4 turnovers. Roy Hibbert had 6 points, just 6 points from Roy Hibbert and 4 rebounds. Even the energetic Lance Stephenson couldn't get his flustered teammates right. At Stephenson played very well last night. He scored a career-best 23 points, and Luis Scola added a season-high 18 points. But the Pistons, they get a huge win over the Eastern Conference-leading Indiana Pacers. Guard Chauncey Billups was inactive for the Pistons. We'll also talk about the Pistons later on in today's show. MSU in North Florida, they play tonight, folks. 7 o'clock tonight, that is, at the Breslin Center in East Lansing. You can see the game on the Big Ten Network, and you can listen to it on the radio on the Spartan Sports Network radio. MSU is 8-1 right now. North Florida is 5-6. Tom Izzo is 447-179 in his 19th season, all with the Spartans. North Florida, Matt Driscoll is 88-155 in 9 seasons, 62-78 in five seasons with North Florida. Mark Hollis, MSU Athletic Director Mark Hollis, is pretty confident that Coach D'Antonio and Pat Narduzzi will stay next season. Now, the USA Today recently listed Spartans coach Mark D'Antonio as one of 5 possible candidates for the head coaching vacancy at the University of Texas, while Michigan State defensive coordinator Pat Narduzzi has also become a talked-about option for head coach openings. Hollis said yesterday, quote, "It's a challenge, for D'Antonio and Narduzzi. You want to have coaches that are pursued. At the same time, I've been in constant contact with Coach D and Pat." That's from Mark Hollis. Hollis has been consistent in saying D'Antonio and Narduzzi will be receiving appropriate pay increases along with the rest of the Michigan State football coaching staff. And right now, Hollis is pretty confident that both D'Antonio and Narduzzi will come back next season. And right now is today, the MSU football team, they held Rose Bowl Media Day for local media around the area. D'Antonio was asked about the job in Texas, and he definitely just completely demolished any notion that he would even consider a head football coaching job at the University of Texas. So, Ariel Powers, thanks to 21 points, 11 boards, 3 assists, 3 steals, and 2 blocks against Oakland. What a stat line, my goodness. MSU freshman Ariel Powers has been named Big Ten Freshman of the Week. Powers has 3 double-doubles in her last 4 games and earns Freshman of the Week honors for the 2nd time this season. Powers is 14.1 points per game, our 2nd on the team, and she's been a bright spot in an up-and-down start to the season. So congrats to Ariel Powers. Former Tigers closer Jose Valverde has signed a minor league deal with the Arizona Diamondbacks. The minor league deal is a low-risk move for the D-backs, and Valverde, who will be 36 by the time the season rolls around, heads back to the organization he spent for the first 5 seasons in the majors. Now, Valverde was up and down in Detroit, and last year went 9-12 in save opportunities before being let go. Embattled Miami Dolphins guard Richie Incognito has agreed to be suspended with pay for the rest of the season. Independent investigator Ted Wells looked into the bullying allegations for the Jonathan Martin saga. Is expected to last well into the calendar year next year. And Incognito was suspended on November 3rd. without pay for 4 weeks, and the deal was reached after that suspension had expired. New CBA rules required the Dolphins to either cut Incognito, give him a paid suspension, or let him rejoin the team at the end of that four-week period. So he is suspended with pay for the rest of the season. All right, Vitali Klitschko, interesting story here. Vitali Klitschko has decided to hang up the gloves, retiring from boxing to focus on politics as he pursues a presidential bid in his native Ukraine. Now, Klitschko vacated his WBC heavyweight title, and though he could technically return to challenge a new champion, he doesn't seem terribly interested in doing so, saying, quote, "It's theoretically possible to return to the ring, which I cannot imagine at all happening as things stand now." Klitschko said this in a statement, quote, "I am now concentrating on the politics in Ukraine. I feel people need me there." Klitschko is the leader of the opposition party, UDAR, and plans to run for president in 2015. Well, again, those are your quick hit headliners for this December 17, 2013. If you want to comment on those, again, of course, you can go to our Facebook page at facebook.com/currentsports or tweet me at AlMartinWKAR. And again, we are taking calls after we get to our interview for today's show. We're taking your calls, and we want to get your thoughts on that Lions and Ravens game. Many of you out there, it's got to be so frustrating to watch what ensued last night. And I tell you what, folks, just really quickly before we move on this, Matthew Stafford has got to play better. Matthew Stafford has been absolutely horrible these past few weeks. He was actually 18 of 34 for over 200 yards, one touchdown and three interceptions. Taking care of the ball has not been a staple for this Lions team, and we said it here on the show, they had to take care of the football in order to get this win over the Ravens or to get any win. You got to take care of the football, and that is simply not being done. Stafford forces way too many throws. It seems as though he tries to make things happen that aren't there, and we saw that yesterday. He actually has 12 turnovers, including two fumbles, in his last five games, folks. 12. 12. That's ridiculous. That actually increases his five-game total to 10 when you talk about last night's performance, when you talk about just the interceptions alone. I'm not including fumbles. That's 10 interceptions for a season low 48 QB rating. QB rating. 48, folks. A 48 quarterback rating when you talk about these past five games. That's sad. Now, the likely consequences for the Lions, blowing an opportunity served up perfectly for the taking against this Ravens team, you know, to possibly get back on track. The loss dropped them again. Third place now in the NFC North. Significantly weakened with Green Bay and Chicago having lost their starting QBs for multiple weeks. Couldn't capitalize on that. And now, should the Packers and Bears win this weekend, the Lions could be eliminated from playoff contention before even going into the final game of the season, which is at Minnesota. And I don't even think that game will be a walk in the park. None of these games are now a walk in the park now. They have two games left. And this is going to be one heck of a ride for people to watch and to see how this pans out. Jim Schwartz, I think now it's safe to say that he is on the hot seat. The leadership of this team is clearly not where it needs to be. And, you know, I have to agree with those who have commented on our Facebook page, Max and Carnell, and Mark, who also pointed out those third and one play calls. Absolutely terrible last night. Why not give it to Reggie Bush, a man who scored on the opening drive of that game last night? Why not give it to Reggie Bush or Joique Bell and let them pound it for 1 yard? I don't understand it. It puzzled me. It puzzled me greatly. And not to mention, it seemed as though last night nothing, absolutely nothing went right for the Lions. Calvin Johnson, Megatron, the best wide receiver in the game, he couldn't get it going. Multiple drop passes. He actually had two key drop passes that possibly could have led to scoring drives for the Lions. Just dropped right in his hands, and you know it falls to the ground. So many things went wrong for this Lions team. And, you know, it was just definitely a frustrating day. 61-yard field goal. I don't think anybody watching that game, anybody sitting at Ford Field, even Ravens fans, did not think that, you know, that kick would go through the uprights. And it did. And, you know, now Lions fans and in Detroit Lions Nation is in one critical moment, a scary moment. Again, later on in the show, we're going to open up our phone lines, and we're going to let you get any frustration that you want to get off your chest when it comes to the Honolulu Blue. Because, you know, that Lord knows that this is just so frustrating. You got to be beyond frustrated as a Lions fan to sit there and watch what's ensuing right now. So, again, later on the show, we're going to open up our phone lines, and we're going to let you call in. And we're not done. Matt's going to come in with me as well. We're going to really dive into and dissect this game and this season for the Detroit Lions now, who are, and I think it's safe to say this now, they are in desperation mode, without a doubt. Without a doubt, folks. So, okay, well, let's welcome our guests for today's Current Sports. Former NFL offensive lineman Pete Clifford is among an elite class of MSU Spartan athletes. While earning Spartan Football Awards for Leadership, which is the Captain's Award, Most Outstanding Lineman, which is the Upfront Award, and Hardest Working in the Weight Room, the Iron Man Award, Clifford was also named to the Academic All-Big Ten Team in 2004 and 2005. Now, the Salem, New Hampshire native was named to the First Team All-State at Salem High School as a starting center, where he also competed in basketball and track. After an injury-plagued professional career in the National Football League, with time spent with Arizona, Tennessee, and New York, Clifford turned his attention to his true passion in providing care, advice, and financial services, now with Merrill Lynch. Pete, welcome to Current Sports. How you doing, man?
I'm great. How you doing?
Very, very well. First of all, thanks so much for joining us here on the show. Now, Pete, first of all, I want to talk about your career after Michigan State, you know, playing football for the Spartans for a second. As mentioned, you had an injury-plagued career in the NFL. What exactly happened, Pete?
Yeah, honestly, I could not stay healthy, and it was really tough because I never really got hurt at Michigan State, and, you know, it's like you go to where you're getting paid for it, and I just could not stay healthy. I went to the Cardinals and was doing well in camp, doing well in all the off-season stuff. We went into the preseason, played two, you know, quality preseason games at two different positions, you know, showed my versatility, thought I had a good shot at making the team, and I tore my my right calf in practice going into the third game. And, you know, being an undrafted free agent, you don't really have much, you know, clout. So, you know, Coach Wisenhunt brought me in his office and said, you know, it's a shame you got hurt, but, you know, we can't hold on to you. So I rehabbed. I felt great. I told my agent, let's get back on, you know, on the train and got a workout with the Titans. Mm-hmm. Went to the workout and tweaked the same calf. So that sat me out the whole 08 season. Next year, Titans signed me anyways because they liked my workout. Went there, started doing all the off-season stuff. Was, you know, I felt like I was one of the best in shape offensive linemen, doing well. OTA, tore my ACL, my meniscus, had a serious bone bruise. So that put me on the IR pretty much the whole year. And I stayed there, and I worked out, and I felt great. And then, you know, once I got healthy, that's when I got the boot there. But So then no one would touch me in the NFL, and I ended up going to the UFL and played, you know, I mean, I actually stayed healthy during that season. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, no one else really picked me up after that year, even though I started at right tackle. And then I ended up on the Jets the following year, and I thought I had a pretty good camp, but you know, I was struggling with my knee a little bit and my back. And then when I came out here to Arizona, I was training in the off season. I ended up herniating a disc in my back and made my whole leg kind of numb up. And I tried to come back off that. I felt I could play. And I went to a Canadian workout mini camp. And after through the first practice, my hips started tightening up, and I just didn't feel safe. I wasn't playing to the best of my ability because of that. Mm-hmm. And I grabbed the coach after the practice and I said, hey, can I talk to you? And I told him, I'm going to call it a career. And it was probably the hardest thing I ever had to do in my life, you know.
Right.
But it was probably what's best because, I mean, one more wrong step or this and that or something with that disc and I probably could have been a lot worse, even though, I mean, it's pretty bad. I'm still feeling from my foot being partially numb and stuff. But,
right.
You know, so.
Now,
yeah,
now,
that was, you know, basically the rundown right there.
Pete, for you, I mean, a guy who has been, you know, playing the game of football, you know, most of your life, you know, you played it, you know, you went here to Michigan State and played, and then, you know, you go on to try to chase the dream of playing in the NFL. I mean, that's the ultimate dream. And, you know, you become an undrafted free agent. I mean, all these injuries, like you just ran down, I mean, to take place. I mean, how hard was it? You know, when you talk about it was hard coming to grips with it. I mean, how did you come to grips that your football career, that this dream was now over?
Honestly, it took quite some time. And still, I mean, to this day, I still, you know, I feel it. And it's tough for me to watch the NFL. It's tough for me to, you know, and see some of those things. Because one of the biggest things is I felt like I wasn't an illogical guy. You know, you'll talk to some guys and like, oh, I could have been a Pro Bowler and this and that if this happened, you know. Mm-hmm. I know my place. I know I was probably a second-team guy in the NFL. But I could have had a long, lucrative career as a second teamer in the NFL. I mean, a lot of guys do that. And honestly, it's almost like if I went to Arizona and was just getting beat on every single play, I could have walked away from the game and said, you know what, I'm just not really good enough to be in the NFL. But when I was healthy, I was competing, and like I said, I could have been right there, you know what I mean? And that's the hardest thing that I think it would take. And that's why, you know, I still – even to this day, I mean, I've gotten over it, mm-hmm. and I, you know, I've come to grips with it. But it is definitely something that is always there. You know, just wish I stayed healthy. You know, so
right,
kind of how the cookie crumbles sometimes.
Right now, for Pete, you now, of course, you're not playing football now. Do you still? Can you talk about the effects that you? Do you have any effects right now from those injuries that you know ensued while playing football?
Yeah, absolutely. I still have, you know, my right big toe is still partially numb. Some of the head stuff, you know, it's kind of funny because you technically don't have documented concussions sometimes, but I mean, I was that big meathead offensive lineman, you know, you get your bell ring, you black out on the field a little bit and you get right back in there because that's what you do. Especially as a undrafted guy trying to make a team, you know.
Right.
It's no matter what, you know. Especially my last preseason with the Jets, you know, I had a play where my whole right arm went completely like numb in the game, and I was like, "This is my last chance. I've already been on too many IRs, you know." And you just keep going. So, yeah, I still have, you know, my foot being partially numb. My back is in, you know, some pain and stuff, but, you know, nothing too crazy. I mean, I still actually am involved a little bit with coaching a high school team out here.
Yeah.
I volunteer coach at an 8-man football team out here in the Valley in Phoenix. So
right.
It's fun, but, yeah.
Now you said, Pete, that there were times where you know, you talked about you being a lineman. I mean, there were times where you would be on the football field and, like you said, get your bell rung. You know, feel as though there's something wrong here, but you would go right back out there? That's unheard of now in today's game.
Oh, yeah. I mean, and that's the thing is there's so much more, you know, studies being done and so much more information coming out that, you know, that's the thing is I didn't even know that. I didn't realize that, you know, that's classified as concussion. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
You didn't know that until these days, you know, and it's like, wow, like, yeah, I did have some concussions, but I didn't classify them that. It's just that's how. And I'm not, you know, in no way, shape, or form am I putting that, like, blame. That's just how you felt as an offensive lineman. That's just what you did. You know what I mean? You played through pain. You played through everything because that's, you know, that's the position. That's being a tough guy. And that's, yeah, now you understand that's not being the smartest guy because of all the information. But mm-hmm. the truth, I mean, that's just what you did. So,
Pete, for you, I mean, looking at the documented studies that have come out now about chronic traumatic encephalopathy, or better known as CTE, and looking at, you know, what CTE has done to certain players in the league. Of course, Junior Seau, you know, a player who played in the pros and actually committed suicide, and it was found, you know, after looking at his brain, you know, in the autopsy, that he had traces of CTE. Guys like Tony Dorsett, who, of course, former running back for the Dallas Cowboys, who, you know, went on ESPN not too long ago and talked about, you know, how he'll be in the middle of, you know, hopping on a plane and just forgetting automatically, you know, out of nowhere where he's going to, and forgetting where, you know, mid-drive that he's taking his daughter to soccer practice. I mean, how scary is that thought for you when you see these reports?
You know what? It's extremely scary. It's just, I mean, and that's what, and that's, you know, it's almost one of the things that, you know, is a silver lining to me being done with football, is that maybe if I had that 15-year career, you know, as a backup, and it's not even taking hits in the game, it's taking hit after hit after hit practice, and it's not the fact that, you know, you don't see a lot of linemen take, you know, a big hit like a wide receiver type thing or a running back. You don't see those huge hits, but it's the constant every single down hitting your head against the back.
Right.
And that, you know, honestly, it's almost, like I said, a silver lining that I'm done now. And, you know, like with, you know, my pretty short career in the NFL, like I hope that it's not going to get to that point. I mean, I feel like I have some of those effects now that people are talking about them, you know.
What effects do you have?
I mean, just like the thing where you, like, you kind of like walk into a room and you're like, why did I walk into the room? You know, what was I coming here to get? And you have to sit there and kind of analyze it. Hey, what was I coming in here for? Mm-hmm. Like, that happens, you know, not all the time, and like not to the extent, like, you know, obviously that I think Tony Dorsett, you know, described it for me, because I didn't have that long of a career. I mean, how long he played for? What?
Oh, a long time.
Yeah, like, I mean, quite a long time. He took huge hits, you know, game after game, and with less, you know, worse helmets and that type of thing. So I don't think it's quite to that point, and at all. But I mean, you just feel those little effects, and it's kind of funny. You don't realize them until you're made aware of them, and you kind of see all these studies coming out, and think, oh wow, that happens to me, or oh wow, you know, that happens to me, you know, that type of thing.
Right.
So.
Right.
But for the most part, I take away. I mean, I see all these guys, and even a guy, a former Michigan State guy, you know, Joe DeLaMalaire. I saw him on one of those shows, and just it makes me, you know, feel a little bit lucky almost that I didn't play, you know, much longer type thing. So,
right. Okay. Ladies and gentlemen, if you're just now joining us here on Current Sports, I'm talking with Pete Clifford. He is a former Michigan State football player and also a former pro in the NFL. Pete, for you talked about how now you coach a youth football team out there in Arizona. What are you teaching these kids to try to make the game a bit safer?
Honestly, I mean, number one is absolute fundamentals of football and using your hands, especially as an offensive lineman, defensive lineman, is you go hands first. And even, you know, and I'll take some experiences that I have personally, and I'll say, you know, hey guys, like, I use my head a little too much, you know what I mean? You guys need to use your hands or that type of thing. And always heads up football. I mean, that whole thing that's going on right now across, you know, football, heads up football, those are the first two things I say to any of my players is use your hands. And always see what you're hitting. Your head's up, you know what I mean?
Right.
And that'll take, you know, spinal injuries out of it and, you know, try to limit the head hits. So, and even now, like, even in Arizona and youth in our high schools, we limit our contact to, you know, only once, you know, twice a week at the most type thing. So there's definitely been a movement towards trying to make the game safer, for sure.
Yeah, definitely. And heads up football is definitely an initiative that's sweeping the nation and trying to make the game safer. Now, Pete, let's on a lighter note. Now, I gotta ask you: you being a former MSU football player, of course, you know MSU now going to the Rose Bowl the first time in over two decades. How special was it for you to watch that OSU game and seeing the Spartans book that trip to Pasadena?
Honestly, it was. is unbelievable. I still stay in contact with Coach D'Antonio and Coach Staten, you know, my offensive line coach, tight end, my offensive line coach when I was there. Coach Dan Rochard, who's now with the Saints, he was my offensive lineman coach also. But it was, Ohio State fans, they drive me, they probably drive me, besides Michigan fans, they drive me the most crazy because I don't know what it is, but it doesn't matter where you're from in Ohio, yeah. You're an Ohio State fan just because they're the team that has done well. You know what I mean? If you want to see the definition of fair-weather fans, I feel like it's Ohio State.
Right,
you know,
right.
You got somebody from Akron or whatever, this and that, and like on the big. Why aren't you a Zips fan? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Why aren't you an Akron Zips fan? Because Ohio State's a good team. Okay, that makes sense.
Right, exactly.
So honestly, it was so great. My next door neighbor is Ohio State fan. He graduated from there, and it was just.
Oh, you rubbed it in his face,
funny.
I'm sure.
Oh man, I saw this thing on the Big Ten Network the other day. The Journey. I don't know if you catch.
Oh yeah,
that,
definitely.
But,
yeah.
But I texted him and said, "Hey, there's a great special on the on Big Ten Network if you wanted to catch it." And he was like, "Oh man!" So it was. I mean, and I'm so proud. You know, tell you the truth. I mean, being through only 1 year with Coach D'Antonio and those coaches, it was only a matter of time before this happened. You know what I mean? It just the discipline and everything that Coach D'Antonio has brought to that program. It, like I said, it was only a matter of time before this happened. And honestly, I might like ruffle a few feathers here or whatever, but honestly, if NBC didn't pay the referees so much to make Notre Dame a relevant team, we could be in the national championship right now.
I've heard that argument before, Pete, so you're not the first one.
I mean, that was the only loss, and some of those calls were just really, really questionable. So,
Without a doubt. I mean, there were so many. There was not one pass interference call on MSU's end. I mean, Trey Wayans got the blunt of it, and each and every call, you sit there looking, just shaking your head, like, "Come on, really, dude?" But I understand. I definitely understand.
Yeah, and you never think it's going to come back to affect you like the way it has. But you know, obviously, the Rose Bowl and the Big Ten Championship is such an awesome, you know, reward for the season they've had and, you know, the defense that they've had. And like I said, it's just being with that team and seeing how Coach Narduzzi coaches and such, you know, such pride and emotion, the same thing with Coach D'Antonio and Coach Staten and all the coaches and offensive coordinator, you know, Dave Warner, just, like I said, it's only a matter of time. And I think it's just going to, you know, keep happening because now the recruits – and everybody that, you know, they're seeing what's happening in the state of Michigan and the Big Ten, and they're all going to want to come to Michigan State because of, you know, those coaches and our program and our school. So
Pete, you talk about those coaches, and you talked about you still being in touch with Coach D and the rest of the coaching staff there. What is your relationship now with Coach D like?
You know what? It's really unbelievable because I don't have it. You know, no matter. If I call him, he picks up the phone. You know what I mean? And that doesn't happen with, you know, a lot of coaches sometimes. You know, they'll get back to you when they can or this and that. But, you know, this is a guy who just won the Big Ten Championship and, you know, has obviously has a lot on his plate right now and probably had 400, you know, 1,000 calls from everyone. But if I call him, he's going to pick up the phone because I was one of his former players and, you know, and he respects me that way. So, it's, you know, it's unbelievable. It just shows you, you know, what kind of guy he is and what he's brought to that program, you know, that type of thing. He actually cares about a lot of the former players, and he appreciates what we gave, you know, that senior year and the fact that, you know, he always says to us, he goes, you know, you guys built that foundation. And to me that, you know, that feels pretty good because, you know, watching this, you know, sometimes when I see all the success and stuff, and you kind of you get a little, you get a tad bit jealous because you're like, damn, I wish I was, you know, doing that. You know,
I wanted to ask you about that because I talked to Otis Wiley not too long ago. I mean, it's got to be bittersweet for you guys. I mean, even though it's great for MSU to go to the Rose Bowl, I mean, but you guys were former players. You guys hit that gridiron in water green and white. There's got to be a tad bit, you know, a little jealousy there. Like, oh man, we could have. That should be me. You know.
Yeah. Yeah, and honestly, I mean, I'd be lying, and I think any former player, I think anybody would be lying if they didn't say there was a tad bit there. Right. But, I mean, it's greatly overweighted by us being happy, the fact that I'm going to get to go to the Rose Bowl and that type of thing. And you know, it's, you know, my time has moved on from there. And that's, you know, and it just keeps going back to I knew it was going to happen. You know what I mean? And yeah, there's a tad bit of jealousy because you always, you know, you want to be still in that locker room. You want to be dancing after, you know, the Nebraska game. You want to be doing that type of thing. But honestly, I couldn't be more happy for those guys and more proud of, you know, what the Spartan means these days. And,
right.
You know, one of the things I did text Coach D is just how proud I am to wear, you know, that Spartan on my chest now. And out here in Arizona, you know, there's a big Big Ten following from Ohio State, Michigan, Iowa, all these teams, and just how, you know, every single, and I do a lot of stuff with the NFLPA. I do a lot of golf events. I do a lot of, you know, things like that. And every single golf event, I actually wear this green pullover that has a Spartan on it. And every single one, I wear that. You know what I mean?
It's right.
And the football community is great because, you know, all these guys play at different places, and you know they see that, and you just get to kind of puff up your chest and say, you know, I was a Spartan, so.
It's got to be.
And I actually was golfing with Kwame Lassiter. He played in the league for about 12 years. He went to Kansas, and Coach D was his coach there. And,
oh, okay.
You know, that far along, and he couldn't just, you know, he couldn't have more praise for Coach D'Antoni. And just,
right.
It's just, you know, it's just kind of, when you see that many different perspectives, but they're all kind of the same, you know what type of person that is. And that's, I don't think it was a, you know, they couldn't have been a more perfect hire for that school.
Without a doubt. And for those, this is breaking news. I'm looking here at today was Rose Bowl Media Day. D'Antonio was asked about the Texas job, and he says, quote, MSU is a destination, not a stop. So D'Antonio is apparently turning down any notion of him going to the University of Texas for that job. Hey, Pete, before I let you go, I got to ask, you know, you saw that locker room after the Big Ten championship game. You know, they're dancing to Rich Homie Quan some type of way. Did you guys have any special song that you guys used to dance to after every win back when you played at MSU?
you know, honestly, I can't think of any, like, special, like, you know, like, current, like, rap songs or anything like that.
Right, right.
Really, you know, stand out right now that I can think of off the top of my head. But I mean, we got into the, you know, fight song and counting down our points and that type of thing, and got into that. And yeah, there was like there's one song on top. I know Caleb Thornhill would remember it, but I can't think of off the top of my head. But I mean, just singing the fight song after a good victory and counting down the amount of points you got was just, you know, that was huge. Yeah, nothing like it.
Hey, Pete, thanks so much for joining me. There you have it. Pete Clifford, former MSU football player and pro, and now Pete is providing care, advice, and financial services with Merrill Lynch. Hey, Pete, stay in touch. Thanks so much for joining me today.
Hey, no problem. I appreciate you guys having me on.
No problem. All right. Well, guys, let's take a quick break. When we come back, we will take your calls on the Lions letting one slip away. 517-355-9527. Again, that number is 517-355-9527. We'll talk about that. And on the contrary, the Detroit Pistons got a huge win last night over one of the NBA's best. Don't touch that dial. Current Sports is coming right back. Welcome back to Current Sports. I'm your host, Al Martin. We just finished talking with former MSU football player and former NFL player and pro, I should say, Pete Clifford. Pete is now working with Merrill Lynch. He was a pretty good player when he was here. Played lineman. I tell you, there's got to be some scary stuff, Matt. You know, you talk about CTE and what we know now about it. When you walk in a room and you can't remember anything, and this is not even a guy who had a very long NFL career. And, you know, he's having signs of it. That's scary stuff, man. I don't know how we'd deal with that.
Yeah, the more we find out, the worse it seems to get.
Yeah,
so.
Without a doubt. All right, well, the story that everyone is talking about in Michigan, and nationally as well, because that was one heck of a kick from Justin Tucker to win to the Ravens topping the Lions last night. 18-16, your final score of that one. The Lions letting one slip away. Same old Lions, it seems like. You guys heard my thoughts on it. Man, first off, let's just kick this thing off. Again, if you want to call in and share your thoughts on what you think went wrong with the Lions and now their future, what their future holds as the season now dwindles down. Will they make the playoffs? Will Jim Schwartz be fired? What's going to happen? 517-355-9527. Again, 517-355-9527. Call in and share your thoughts right now. We're taking your calls throughout the rest of the show. Matt, what's on your mind about this game, man?
Al, I hate watching this team. You talk all the time about how hard it is to watch the Cowboys, but at least when the Cowboys lose, they do it in, like, epic fashion. Like, it's just the, you know, huge blown leads.
They put up some fight.
The Lions just go out with a whimper. Mm-hmm. They are so disappointing. Last night was awful. Maybe the worst game of the year. And this season has probably been more disappointing than maybe years in the Millen era. Right. And in the Millen era, it was just, you know, ineptitude from top down. They were just terrible all the way through in almost every facet of the organization. They didn't have talent anywhere. You know, now they've got the pieces in place. The division parts like the Red Sea for them to make the playoffs, and they continue to shoot themselves in the foot. Mm-hmm. Matthew Stafford was horrific last night.
Terrible. He's overrated, man.
And Aaron and I were talking, we were going to argue with that, you know, he's not overrated, but last night might have turned the tide for me because he's not even making easy throws. It's like the ones that the guys are catching, they're getting laid out. I mean, immediately getting hit. They're all just bullets into tight windows. Mm-hmm. It should be easier to move the ball when defenses have to pay so much attention to Calvin Johnson. There should be guys open. You know, you see other offenses do it. Right. I mean, heck, the Ravens would just run crossing routes across the field, and guys are getting open by 6 yards.
Jacoby Jones. I mean, if you look at the final drive of that game, first of all, this is the thing that I have a problem with. The Lions, like you said, Matt, you're on the biggest stage, one of the biggest stages in the NFL, Monday Night Football. The history of Monday Night Football, I mean, speaks alone. The Lions don't get to play in these games often. You're on the national stage here. You got a chance to show everybody that we're serious, the Lions are serious, and that, you know, they can make the playoffs. Perfect opportunity. Prime time. Matthew Stafford, a guy who I've said on this show, and we talked about it here, I think he's overrated. He forces way too many throws, but he had an opportunity last night to prove to me and all of those who say that he's overrated that's not the case. You do it on a big stage like this, and he did not show up whatsoever. He forced way too many throws last night, which I thought he's done all season. And some of those throws, those sidearms that he throws all the time, what is he looking at sometimes? I just sit there and say, what is going through your head right now?
No, I agree. You know? And it's because sometimes it's necessary, and, you know, sometimes he's trying to fit it through the line, but, like, the one that stood out, I'm sure, to everybody is the screen pass to Joik Bell.
Yes.
Why on earth? There is no one near you.
Nobody.
Just get it to him. Put it out in front. And instead he puts it on his hip, his back hip, behind him, and he drops it.
Right.
And it counted as an on-target drop, which I don't know about that.
Right.
I mean, if you're throwing a 3-yard screen pass, it should be on the money.
Exactly.
I mean, you're getting paid millions and millions of dollars. He's on pace for possibly one of the worst years of his career. He's already got 17 interceptions. His career high is 20, his rookie season. He's got 4 lost fumbles. Yep. He's got 21 turnovers on the year, which ties his career high.
Right.
So, you know, and he's still got 2 games to go. I think the most disappointing part is that they continue to make the same mistakes over and over and over again.
It's a cycle. You know, it's so frustrating. And you talk about the Lions. I mean, if you're going to be a team to be reckoned with in the NFL or in any sport, to be honest with you, you gotta have an attitude. You got to have a swagger, you know, about you. And you got to have a cool and confident demeanor about you. And that's something that really stuck out to me. When the Ravens were down in that game last night, Torrey Smith had an interesting comment. I watched the presser, and Torrey Smith had an interesting comment. And one of the reporters asked him what the atmosphere was like in the huddle when they were down, and you know, and possibly about to lose the game. And Torrey Smith just told him, he said, we were it wasn't any ruckus. We were calm, we were confident, and we said, hey, let's get him in this drive. You don't see that with the Lions. That type of attitude is vacant from the Lions. It almost seems as though when they're down or facing a moment of desperation or on a stage like this, panic almost ensues. And you can see it on the face of Schwartz, who's known for being a hothead. And you can almost see it on his face. He's throwing headsets down, going off on the ref. When you look at Harbaugh, they look cool. It's the other side of the pillow. You know what I mean? Like, we're going to win this game. That's the attitude you got to have.
Yeah, and I mean, that's why they were Super Bowl champions last year.
Exactly.
I mean, and that comes with that championship. You know, you have confidence in yourself that you're never out of it. It's never over. And, I mean, that's just the whole thing about they crumble under pressure. They crumble when they have things to lose. Mm-hmm. You know, the big wins over the Schwartz regime are huge comebacks. When they're down 20, they have nothing to lose, and they just go out guns blazing.
Just let their hair
down.
And
they come back, and they put themselves back in games, and then they end up winning. But it's when, you know, it's their division to lose, and they're doing a heck of a job of losing it. It's when the pressure is on them, they crumble. There's no mental fortitude, and for a coaching staff that is as confident in its abilities to scheme and call plays and do all this and that, mm-hmm. sure doesn't seem like the players are following their lead.
No,
and
not,
I think
not at
it,
all.
It starts with coaching. You can't have fall or offside penalties week after week from your defensive tackles.
Right, that's discipline. That's what it comes to, and that's why I think if lo and behold, if the Lions don't make the playoffs,
he's gone.
Jim Schwartz needs to be fired.
And he deserves to be.
Period. No, exactly. He definitely deserves to be. Point blank, no ifs, ands, or buts about it. Like you said, Matt, the thing that's so different about this season, and you just said it, is that you have the pieces in place to make the playoffs and make a nice little run, possibly, if you get in there. And you were in perfect position to do that, I believe, before the Pittsburgh game. We're sitting there like, oh, they could run the tables here. They could really run the tables and go out with a bang and have one historic Lions season that we've never seen before, at least in my lifetime. And they go out and they don't get it done. And that right there has to do with one word, and I go back to it, leadership. There is no leadership on this team whatsoever from anybody. And if there is going to be leadership, you will look to your head coach to provide that. And Schwartz simply has not done that at all. And even when, you know, the Lions clearly make mistakes, he will go on press conferences and deflect everything and anything that's thrown his way criticism-wise about what happened on the field that day. And I have a huge problem with that. And like I said, if they don't, lo and behold, whatever happens this season, if they do not make the playoffs, Matt, I don't care. He needs to be fired. He needs to be gone.
Yeah, it's like you can't learn from your mistakes if you don't own up to them.
Right.
And they're not learning from their mistakes, and they continue to make them. I mean, how many weeks in a row have we talked about turnovers? Oh, that's going to hurt the Lions,
right.
And yet they continue to throw two interceptions and fumble once a game. It's
sad, man.
It's a broken record, and it's terrible.
Yes, it is. I believe we have a caller right now, Matt. Max on line one. How you doing, Max?
Hey, how's it going?
My brother, how you doing?
I just had to comment on all this nonsense about the Lions. You know, it's sad. I mean, I don't know if you guys said it, but it's sad. I mean, when you start to see coaches, or when you start to see Jim Schwartz sort of act like a Lions fan, sort of apathetic, like he doesn't care, and, oh, yeah, we're used to this. Oh, the fans won't care. You know, it's just the Lions. When you feel like you see that from your own coach, you know, I feel like it's time you do something about it, you know.
Right, exactly. I got to ask you, Max, I mean, do you think Jim Schwartz should be fired if they don't make the playoffs?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, it's just you already know coming into it that you have a group of guys that are, first of all, used to not winning, maybe have a bad attitude. Then you start, like you said, putting the pieces together, getting everybody involved that, you know, you would need to make the playoffs and possibly contend for a championship, and we're at that point. And now you're just sort of, you're not taking control of a good situation. If you put Nick Saban as the coach of the Lions, mm-hmm. I guarantee you we would make the playoffs, 100%.
Right. I agree wholeheartedly with you, man. Hey, Max, thanks a lot for the call, man.
No problem.
Yeah, it starts there, Max, and you just shake your head. There's nothing more I can say. You know, the Lions are just...
It's depressing.
It's depressing. And, you know, for you got to feel for Lions fans out there. You know, me being from the D. I mean, just to explain the culture of the Lions really quick. The Lions are so bad that those who, you know, live in this state, specifically live in Detroit, and that's your hometown team. They've been so bad for so many years that I've had the attitude growing up, and this is how my dad was, this is why I'm a Cowboys fan, that they're so bad that you know they're going to be so bad each and every year, that you find another team in the NFL to root for, to make it fun. And that's basically how my dad became a Cowboys fan. It's so bad. When you have that history and you finally have a team like this that could be something special, and to see it squandered, that's why Lions fans take this loss and take this season so personal and take it harder than probably any other – take it worse than any other team who's doing pitiful in the league today, period.
Yeah, no.
We never had the success.
I hear you. And, you know – last night, watching it with my friends, we were all betting on how the Lions would lose. Right. And we thought it was going to be a David Akers missed field goal.
Right.
You know, like a 36-yarder or something. You know, after, you know, we figured that the Lions would drive and, you know, get everybody's hopes up that maybe, oh, man, they're going to pull this one out and then miss a kick to win it. But they didn't even get that far.
No,
it ends with Matt Elam. Mr. Too Old.
I know, right?
With the interception. He gets the last laugh.
He gets the last laugh after calling out the old man.
On a horrible throw by Stafford.
Terrible throw. Terrible. I don't know what he was
looking at. And Calvin probably had his worst game in probably all year.
He probably had his worst game, arguably, of his – yeah, I mean, you could argue that was probably his worst game of his career. I mean, looking at what was on the line.
It was just – yeah. And giving Bush 17 carries, the third and one calls. It's just all of it.
It's terrible, man. It is terrible.
All of it.
All of it. You know what? We're going to shift gears now, Matt. It's Tuesday. On a more lighter note here, and you know what? When I was out sick and you held it down, you, my man, you held it down like nothing else. And you know, you popped an idea in my head, Matt, when you brought up the, which I haven't seen. I haven't seen the 24/7 NHL documentary on the Red Wings. I heard it's unbelievable. I have not seen it. But I'm a huge, huge sports documentary fan. And I said, hey, why not? Let's do it. The top five sports documentaries of all the time, because there are a lot of them. We're gonna try to breathe. We got what, 8 minutes left. What's your list look like, Matt?
All right. Well, first of all, I like sports documentaries that kind of open up the doors to a new sport or kind of take a look into something that I'm not particularly knowledgeable about.
Right.
So I'm gonna start out with Pumping Iron from 1977,
Pumping Iron,
featuring a young Arnold Schwarzenegger, and it is an exploration of the world of bodybuilding.
Okay. Okay.
It's just interesting in general.
Right.
B, you get to hear Arnold Schwarzenegger talk before he had really become Hollywoodized and Americanized as, you know, as this politician or star. And you just get to see people, you know, 40 years ago now when they were way younger and before they became the men that we know them as today. So that's number five.
Man,
number
Arnold
four.
Arnold Schwarzenegger is huge, too, man. Oh, my gosh.
Oh, he is a giant.
That's ridiculous.
It's
insane.
Number four, I'm going to lump in the 24/7 Road to the Winter Classics, Hard Knocks, all the boxing things
all
they do.
All of those 24/7s are so good, man.
Really well done.
Yeah. The thing about them, they put you in a different realm. You know, you get to see all the behind-the-scenes things,
right,
which that's the coolest thing about it, I think.
I agree. You get to see the business and just the logistics side of being a professional athlete.
They don't bleep out anything either. I mean, it's straight up raw.
Yeah, it's all, you know what I mean? Coaches are hilarious.
Yes,
that's
they
basically
are.
The
yeah.
end goal of those. Number three, stretching sports a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Is King of Kong, Fistful of Quarters, from 2007. King of Kong.
Never heard of that.
It's called that because it is about the tug of war, basically, over the world record in the Donkey Kong arcade game between Billy Martin, who holds records in a bunch of different arcade games.
Right.
He's, I guess you could call, I think they refer to him as the Michael Jordan of arcade games in the documentary.
Interesting.
Versus Steve Wiebe, who was a teacher who had a machine in his garage and would just practice there. They kind of tuggle over the world record, and it's, you get to see the, you know, the gaming commission and how they regulate the world record runs. It's interesting.
I'm gonna look that up.
It's really interesting.
Yeah.
Number two, I'm gonna go Murderball from 2005. Now that is about quad rugby. So it's got all these guys who are quadriplegics and they join the US quad rugby team.
Okay.
they get to tell kind of a traditional sports story, like they follow this team as they go along. But because the subjects are non-traditional, you get to look at, you know, different aspects of being an athlete when you are, you know, handy, capable.
I've heard of this one.
I've seen a preview of this one. Good documentary.
Yeah.
And then number one, it's got to be Hoop Dreams.
Hoop Dreams is one of those classic. That actually was probably, I think Hoop Dreams is the very first sports documentary I ever saw.
I mean.
And it followed these two kids in Chicago, and, you know, they were really, really good in high school. Really, really good kids. And, you know, Isaiah Thomas, I think, makes a cameo in one of the kids' lives. And I wonder what happened to them. They didn't make it to the NBA. They didn't make it, I don't think, if I can't remember.
It goes beyond basketball, though.
It goes beyond basketball.
And that's what you want from a documentary. You want to go beyond the things you already know and show you a different side of sports.
Exactly. Yeah, it's Hoop Dreams. Hoop Dreams is actually number one on my list. For me, in no particular order, I'm going with the Fab Five. Fab Five documents, of course, you know, the entire fiasco of what took place at the University of Michigan with Chris Webber and Jalen Rose. I mean, that core right there and the Ed Martin situation, I thought it was very well done. The thing that disappointed me, I think Chris Webber is still holding on to – he's still angry to day about – What went down, and he wasn't featured.
You should call timeout.
Yeah, he took a boom. Where's Aaron at on that one? All right, anyway.
Where's the rim shot, Aaron? Come on.
That was a good one. All right. The U, which chronicles, this is another 30 for 30. These are both 30 for 30s. The U chronicles Miami University when they were such an unbelievably dominant football team in the 80s. Very well done there. Benji, have you seen Benji?
Yes, Benji's really good.
Benji is really, really good. He chronicles a kid who went to Simeon High School in Chicago, a famed high school there.
Jabari Parker went
there and played ball there, and he actually wore Benji's number when he was in high school, I believe. And Benji was actually shot and killed. And man, that was a powerful documentary. Especially they actually had an open casket for Benji. That's the part that got me when they had it in the basketball court. I'm giving it away. Whoever hasn't seen, but you're like, oh, Al, you're telling me an entire documentary. But it's a great, great documentary. Something I used to watch, last but not least, Hoop Dreams is my number one. But number two on my list, if I had to put these in order, MJ's highlight videos, which you don't see from players anymore nowadays in the NBA.
No. I think it just went with VHS.
Yeah. That's just probably what it was.
VHS kind of went away, and so did the, you know, like...
Right, the sports...
NBA bloopers. Yeah, they're
gone. Kind of thing, the highlight videos of different players. I mean, MJ had Airtime and Come Fly With Me. He had... I still have the VHS tapes. That Playground was another big one. I still have those VHS tapes sitting next to my TV at the apartment. I used to watch Come Fly With Me before every single high school basketball game before I hit the court.
Get you pumped up.
I used to get so pumped. I used to chew the gum like Mike. I used to try to sack the shorts like Mike.
Al Jordan.
Oh, man. Al Jordan, man, was in full effect back then. But yeah, that's a really good list, man. So I have to watch some things this weekend because I have
not seen Murder Ball.
I've seen the commercial of Murder Ball. But all right, but last but not least, those Pistons, man. Just really quickly, I just want to give a hats off to the Pistons.
First home loss of the season for the Pacers.
Yes, the first home loss to the Pacers. The Pistons are playing very, very well right now. Particularly, I want to shout out Josh Smith, who is balling out of control right now. And Josh Harrelson, where did you come from, brother?
Giving us quality minutes.
Quality minutes. I was sitting there shaking my head when Andre Drummond went out like, oh, my gosh, here we go. Who is Josh Harrelson? I don't know who you are.
And he goes out there outplaying Roy Hibbert.
Yeah, he was unbelievable last night. Oh, hats off to the Pistons, man, on a positive note. All right. Well, thanks so much to all of you for tuning in to today's Current Sports. Thanks so much to former MSU football player, also former NFL player, Pete Clifford, for joining me on today's show. You've been listening to Current Sports with me, Al Martin, on WKAR East Lansing and WKAR FM HD3 East Lansing. As always, take care, have one fantastic Tuesday, and be easy, people.